You're listening to Gameplay with Matthew Cause on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Well, well said. Jim Taddy, something for Matthew Cause. This is Gameplay on a Friday. Gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Now let's dive into the Rangers-Kane series, the Homer series. Corey Laviolette from the North State Journal is here. Corey, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. This series is, I mean, we're talking about Calgary and Edmonton. This is the ultimate contrast because it's so definitive for the home team. What do you make of this?
Well, it's been this way all postseason for the Hurricanes. It seems like they had their situation with the Bruins where they needed the seventh game on home ice to get that done, and now we're kind of in the same boat all over again. Rod Brind'Amour has kind of said, not to make such a big deal out of it. He likes the way the team plays on the road. I think a little bit of that is kind of trying to undersell it and not put any more pressure on his guys than he has to. But yeah, really, really unique. Makes my road trips very interesting to be in a lot of losing locker rooms on the road, or not locker rooms, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I like games 5, 6, and 7 if you get there, because I think they're totally different from 1, 2, 3, and 4. Can you see this starting to change, or is it sort of following suit with the previous four?
You know, I personally think the Hurricanes maybe turned a corner last night. The key to their team is there's not a Connor McDavid, there's not a Nathan MacKinnon, there's not a true standout superstar who's going to take over night after night after night. They need that balance. They need everybody contributing from the top of the lineup. And they finally got it a little bit last night. You know, Vincent Trocheck with that great shorthanded goal off the beautiful pass from Jordan Staal. Andrei Svechnikov finally gets the goal. Tony D'Angelo, who was with Jacob Slavin, led the team in points in the first round, didn't have a point until he got an assist on their power play goal, which was another issue they were having, not being able to score on the power play. So, they get a power play goal. They get goals from a couple guys that haven't been able to put the puck in the back of the net. And it just felt a little different last night. Like maybe a corner has been turned here. And the Rangers have to be wondering, like, even if we do win game 6, do we have any chance in game 7?
Yeah, it's interesting. And just based on what you said there, it almost sounds like what you're seeing out of Carolina, certainly in the last game, is more of what they're capable of. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a team built on balance. And, you look at just in the postseason, the way the scoring is, I mean, they've got 5 guys with 4 goals. Nobody with more than that. There have been times in this series where Seth Jarvis has been their best player. There's other times where Sebastian Aho is. You can always count on Jordan Staal and Jacob Slavin to be who those guys are, which is just absolutely play every shift the right way. Great defensive players who can chip in offensively. But as far as, the offensive side of things, they kind of need it from everyone. Teuvo Teravainen has had a nice little playoff kind of quietly. He's got points in every game at home. And, so it's always about balance with them. Like I said, there's not an Austin Matthews there that's going to, that you can count on for a goal just about every night. So they need contributions throughout the lineup, and that includes defense. And last night finally felt like maybe they're starting to get there.
What I like about this series is it's much more definitive than what we just saw with Calgary and Edmonton, and so there are turning points. In Game 4, the hit on Domi seemed to bother the Canes, and last night it would have been the called back goal by the Rangers, the Strome goal. They didn't seem to be able to recover, although they played well, but those two incidents sort of left a mark, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you can see that. I think you're totally right about Game 4. I don't know that I agree that the Hurricanes should have come out of that on the penalty kill, but that's what happens, and then you give up a power play goal and all of a sudden you're chasing the game. And that's, the Hurricanes are at their best when they're ahead, because other teams start to take chances, and that's when they really pounce and can really, really hurt you. And when they're behind, yeah, they can certainly fight their way back. They've proven they can get their way back in games all season, but they're always at, I think every team is at their best when they're ahead, but the Hurricanes really can assert themselves and roll 4 lines. And there's plenty been made about Jesperi Kotkaniemi and, was he worth it and all this, but he's your fourth line center right now. Like, when your fourth line is centered by a guy like that, when Max Domi's on your fourth line, you know, everyone who's coming over the boards has the ability to do damage offensively. And so, yeah, you know, I think, you know, the big thing is them not getting behind, not letting the Rangers' power play set the tone for the game. And then, certainly the called back goal last night was a big moment. But at the same time, that game had a little bit of a feel of the Hurricanes, you know, asserting themselves a little bit more than maybe they have the rest of the series.
Corey, I'm a big fan of, you know, if it hasn't happened by game five, it should happen in either game six or game seven. So in that respect, for Carolina, what hasn't happened so far?
Well, they finally got that power play goal, which is big. I think, you know, maybe the thing that I would like to see is them kind of survive a little bit of a penalty kill issue. You know, they've had games, you know, their penalty kill was number one all year, and it's still great, but it seems like in this postseason, especially on the road, they haven't been able to get that important kill when they need it. And you know, you got to feel like the Rangers are going to get their chances at home to have a couple cracks on the power play. And I think, you know, to win, the Hurricanes are going to need to, you know, their power play will have to be good, but I think even more importantly, they've got to show that they can stop a top power play. And it seems like no matter where they're, you know, where they end up in this postseason, you know, Boston maybe didn't have the greatest numbers this year, but we all know about Boston's power play and how good they are. The Rangers had a great power play this year and have a lot of talented players. And then if they can advance the next round, well, here you go again, another great power play in Tampa Bay. So I think, to me, that's the thing that stands out a bit. Antti Raanta has been spectacular. I don't think they could ask for anything more from him. I don't think it's on him at all that the penalty kill maybe hasn't been as good as it was in the regular season. But I think if they were to come out, get a couple kills in the first period, get that good feeling going, and, you know, I think it's kind of a weird thing to think of as a way to kind of get your game going, but they really do feed off that.
Corey, what are your thoughts on Raanta, and how close is Freddie to coming back?
Well, we pester Rod about it all the time. He's sick of hearing about it. He said today, yes, he's closer, but he's closer every day. You know, I don't think they're going to rush it. I don't see any way he plays in these final two games. Maybe there's an outside chance he backs up, but I don't see him playing. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think there's a rush to do it just because of how good Raanta's been. And he's a guy, and I'm not saying that the guys don't like Freddie. I think the guys love Freddie too, but Raanta's a really easygoing guy, and he's really liked, you know, he's the Finnish players who are younger than him. You know, there's a handful of other Finns on the team, and they call him Father Finn because he's one of the older guys on the team. And just, you know, he's been really good. It, for a guy who's had a hard luck career, you know, he's as talented as they come, and just so many strange little injuries throughout his career. For him to finally get a chance to shine here, he's probably not getting all the attention he deserves because he's just been just absolutely fantastic. You couldn't ask for anything more than what he's done so far in this postseason.
So you feel it wraps up in game six?
You know, it feels that way to me, but then at the same time, you know, if you had asked anybody who covers the Rangers, they probably would have come out of those two games in New York and said, oh, the Rangers have figured this out. I'm sure they're going to be fine in game five, and they can come home in game six and wrap it up. And here we are again with this this home cooking, as I like to call it. So it felt a little different yesterday with the number of guys that kind of got on the board. But, you know, at the same time, this home thing is a real thing so far, this playoffs for the Hurricanes.
It's wacky. Corey, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
That's Corey Lavallette from North State Journal covering the Canes and Rangers. And sometimes you get these numbers that just don't make any sense, but they're hard fast. And so Carolina on the road, awful. Well, not awful, but losing. This is a stingy series. Through five games, the totals are 9-9. So, you know, an average of not even two goals a game. Stingy is sort of an understatement. I'm just doing some quick math here. just to verify that. So, yeah, 9-9. So that's dead even after five games, and somebody has a 3-2 series lead, and there's that Carolina, all home games they've won, all road games they've lost so far in the playoffs. And, you know, I don't know what it means. It means you can somehow predict the future with the past, but I don't know how long that lasts. And you better hope it reverses with a road win. Otherwise, if it reverses the other way, they're out. So that's how precarious this could be. TSN 1050's Fill My Ride is your chance to win hundreds of dollars in gas money. Listen weekdays at 7:45 a.m. during First Up for the Fill My Ride keyword of the day. And here's the tip. When you hear the cue to call at 8:45, start dialing or dialing. I don't know that you dial anymore. Punch in the numbers, 416-870-1050. The first caller through with the correct keyword of the day wins $250 in gas money. Listen daily to Fill Your Ride, and it's on First Up on TSN 1050. So 7:45, the keyword, 8:45, the cue to call, then you call, and possibly win $250 in gas money if you have the correct keyword and you're the first caller through. There, that makes sense. Do you dial? Nick, do you dial anymore? I don't dial. I hit my keypad.
Yeah, I pretty much hit the keypad, but, I mean, I'm sure somebody dials still.
Well, if you dial, then you're not likely to be the first one in. Just saying. Just saying. What are we going to do when we come back? We got the NBA to go over, and then at the bottom of the hour, Randy Ambrosi, the CFL commissioner. And how did you know? Yes, guy, this is Gameplay on TSN 1050, streaming on TSN1050.ca and the iHeartRadio app. Oh, and it's Friday music. In fact, it's all Friday music because it's Friday. Gameplay, TSN 1050. Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause and Nick McVicker at the controls. So just before we dive into the NBA stuff, coming up on Overdrive at 4, Andy Petrillo, Noodles, and Frankie C. O-Dog is not available for work today, and I think we know why, and we wish him well with the chicklets. And Frankie C., by the way, is on my Yes Guy show tomorrow, and special time for that is at 2 tomorrow afternoon due to world hockey coverage. And Frankie C. and I and my buddy Perry are going to talk about anything but hockey. We're going to talk about food. We're going to talk about golf. It's a scintillating conversation and interesting also. So I'll just leave it at that. So, Nick, let's get into the game of the night. And obviously the Warriors moved on last night, win the series 4-1. Tonight it's the Heat in Boston. And Boston has a 3-2 series lead, and many think they could put it to bed tonight. The over-under is 201. And I know you've got stats on the diminishing totals in this series.
Yeah, I mean, we've been looking at it, you and me, on Wednesday when we previewed game, what was that, 5? Because this is game 6? Yeah. The series just keeps going down and down and down. And even last game, it went down even further. I would be shocked if they go over 201. But the difference between game 6 and game 5 on the betting side, the Celtics are favored by, I believe it's 8.5 right now. Instead of 1.5.
Yeah,
instead
that's
1.5, like,
yeah,
last game.
That's significant.
It's a big number.
I wouldn't think so, but
yeah, it's a big number.
Yeah, I think it is for a winner-take-all game. Maybe because it's on home court, you could sort of push that edge for the Celtics that way. But I think it's a big number with the Heat season on the line.
It's definitely a big number. But as I said on Wednesday, every single game in this series has been separated by 10 points except for one. So 8.5.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense, even though 1.5 made a lot of sense on Wednesday. 8.5 makes a lot of sense right now. Not to mention, the Heat do not look good. The Heat are having some problems. They're not looking right. Lowry's stat line from Wednesday was atrocious. 0-0-0. He had one rebound. That was all he had.
Yeah, I know, but you know, we know because he did that here where it wouldn't look good, and the next night, boy, does he answer. So I wouldn't count him out of anything. I know what you're saying, but the other thing I wouldn't do is I wouldn't make the over under based on anything that happened in the first four games, because to me, they're, as I said earlier, they are disconnected from games 5, 6, and if there is one, 7, in my opinion.
Absolutely, but the other thing that you have to look at is the trends from each team in Miami. Their trend is under. 11 of their last 16 games have gone under. You look at 5 of the last 7 on the road. And not to mention, even further, 7 of the last 10 times Miami's been underdogs, the number has gone under. So I would not, I Ooh. Do not see it happening of these two teams going over. They're two very good defensive teams. Let's not take anything away from that. So
yeah,
put that into a must-win game, things are going to be tight. I see this staying under 201.
Okay, so Golden State got through last night. Let's pay a little tribute here. We've got that Steph Curry thing where he's talking to the crowd. So Golden State wins at 120-110 over the Mavs, win the series 4-1 and a game's end. Here is Steph.
This is special. Our fan base to do it in this new building. Everything about it is special. So we know this isn't the ultimate goal, but we got to celebrate this because all we went through these last 3 years. So.
Yeah, that's Steph speaking to the crowd at the Chase Center. 3 years ago, he was at the Oracle mopping up after a loss to the Raptors, and the Oracle hasn't had much to say for the last couple of years because the Chase Center is the new home. Had to do a little spin there, and the Oracle has spoken. It's not saying much anymore. Sorry.
Yeah, very, very true, Taddy. Very true.
What I like about the 2019 memories are every time when I get into that, things just happen when you win, and that's the Raptors. The Raptors that year, if you go back to each one of those series that where it could have gone south, it didn't, and that includes in the final when KD came back in Game 5 and lasted 11 minutes, and then Klay Thompson in Game 6 went out, and that's not to take anything away from the Raptors winning that. They were full value. It's just that things worked out, and in previous years, we saw where things didn't work out because you didn't have the right mix.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line, right?
Didn't
have the right personnel. So
sometimes you need things just to fall into place. And that's honestly, I kind of look at the Edmonton Oilers this year, just kind of having things fall into place. Mike Smith plays good enough against the Calgary Flames, and Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl get everything that they touch turns to gold. Evander Kane, a signing in midseason, is popping off and leading the playoffs with 12 goals right now. Like, everything is falling into place. Now they're probably going to have a very tough test, I'm assuming, against Colorado, but I'm not going to write that in stone. It looks like it's going to be Colorado. That's a tough test.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how they play there.
Well, it's Calgary plus. I mean, that's what Colorado is, right?
There you go.
it's Calgary with higher end offense.
There you go.
And probably a better goaltender in the series. Yeah. And I think that's what you should count on as you go through each round. You should meet the team you met before, but plus. And I think that's good for Edmonton to run into that. And then you get into the fine tuning you have to do to get from the third round into the Stanley Cup and then win the Stanley Cup. My question in the next round is, does Tampa enjoy the week plus off, or is it a detriment? Because right, what I saw in the last six wins was a champion who knew exactly what to do, and you know, they've had a gap there, so that could be a plus or a minus. You know, maybe healing some bodies that are a little beat up, or maybe they just lose their mojo or get behind in the next series against either Carolina or the Rangers, and it costs them. But Tampa looks pretty good to me. So, you know, if it was a Colorado Tampa final, I think we'd all be thrilled. If it wasn't, then it'd be Edmonton and Tampa, or maybe Carolina or the Rangers get through. I don't know which way to go, but whatever Tampa does in the first two games of the next series will tell me a lot.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the potential detriment it could be to the Lightning, but John Cooper spoke, I think it was either yesterday or this morning, about how this is the most beat up his team has been in a single playoff run after the second round. They are battered and bruised, so maybe the week is actually going to help them this year. If it was last year or the year before, I would probably guess that this would have been a detriment. This year, I think they're just going to enjoy the week and try to just get back to healthy.
I would agree with that. You never count out a defending champion, that's for sure, because they know what to do. The question is, will they be able to? And so far, and let's be honest, they won six straight hockey games, so they're due for a loss in there somewhere, and you hope it's just for their sake. It's not multiple losses. We'll see it as we track forward.
So, as we know, Taddy, they don't lose back-to-back games in the playoffs, right?
No. No, they do not. We talked about Colorado St. Louis, and we both favor the Avs. Looking forward to how all this unfolds. We've got baseball, we got basketball, although it's limited now. Makes you miss the first round, right? When they have those four games every night, and now it'll be down to one a night now. So obviously the field thinning out. Coming up next, going to have an interesting conversation, I think, with CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. The CFL is back. The preseason goes tonight. Ottawa at home to the Argos, 7:30 on TSN. Edmonton's in Winnipeg. Tomorrow night, BC Calgary, Montreal Hamilton, as the regular season is on the way. But the preseason starts, and everybody gets their reps in and roster cuts and back to the business, or the business of football. Actually, the football takes over. The business part is done, and we'll explore that new CBA and what lies ahead for the CFL next on Gameplay on TSN 1050, streaming on TSN1050.ca in the iHeartRadio app. Gameplay, TSN 1050. Well, the CFL season resumes. It comes back. The preseason tonight, Ottawa against the Argos, 7:30 on TSN. And who better to have with us than CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. Randy, how are you today, sir?
Jim, I think it is safe to say that I'm having a good day.
As opposed to earlier in the week.
I would say earlier in the week there was a little bit of indigestion and some heartburn, but today it's nothing but smiles and good feelings.
Okay, now the CBA is done, and the preseason starts, and the regular season, I mean, the business is done, and now the games take over. But before we get there, I want to go back to just because of, you know, you are the CFL commissioner, you were a Canadian player, you were drafted in the CFL draft, so, I mean, obviously it's a debatable subject, and a lot of people have a lot of things to say about it. So the decision to go with less playing time for starting Canadians, that whole thing, can you take us through that and why that was so important?
Well, you know, it is a complex issue, but Jim, it really comes down to a few things. Number one, all of our market research suggests that the next generation of CFL fans are all about competition and excellence. And we kept hearing that over and over again, that if we want to earn that next generation of fans, they want the best players playing, and they want a high level of competition. So, you know, you kind of start as a, let's call that one foundation stone. You know, the second is that I think we've come to appreciate, and our coaches have told us, they just need more roster flexibility. So often, Jim, this is not a question of Canadian talent. This is a question of depth, and it often boils down to, you know, when you get injuries, do you have the depth it takes to remain competitive? So that was another factor. We heard from our coaches that they needed some flexibility to make sure they could get the best players onto the field, especially when injuries occurred. And then finally, look, I think just to make it absolutely clear, Jim, this is not a question of whether we think Canadians can compete. It's that we believe and we know they can. And frankly, if you just look around the world of sport today, Canadians are proving themselves in every sport on the planet. They're obviously proving themselves in hockey. They're proving themselves. We've got in the NFL, we've got now 24 Canadians on NFL rosters. They're proving themselves in the NBA. They're proving themselves in Major League Baseball. Canadians can compete. We know they can, and we know this generation of Canadians may be the best generation in our history. So, you know, we know our Canadians can compete. And so, look, I think this addressed significant issues for us. It puts our league in a position to raise the level of our game. And Jim, I think we are asking our Canadian players to compete, and I know they'll rise to that challenge.
Okay, I mean, obviously it's an emotional subject, and I'm not going to belabor this, but I mean, you were a Canadian player. The owners are Canadian. I mean, it had to be a difficult conversation to even start this process.
Yeah, it is, Jim, but if we want to take the game to the next level, look, I hear from CFL fans in every city that I visit. I hear them demanding and wanting us to find that next generation of CFL fans. You know, they want us to do more to grow our game. They're so proud of who we are. But in wanting to meet that challenge that the fans are demanding of us, you have to talk to the next generation of fans, and you have to understand how they perceive us. And this generation are absolutely clear. They want competition and they want excellence. And look, Jim, if I was at all concerned that our Canadian athletes couldn't compete, this would be a real tough issue for me. But, you know, for generations going, you know, from Normie Kwong right through to the great Canadians that play today, Canadians have
proven over and over and over again that they can compete. And then, Jim, the other side of this is that, you know, to reward the Americans who come into our communities and play and compete and live and work and make a contribution, this is for roster continuity. And that's, again, something that our fans have been, you know, demanding and passionate about. So, you know, this gives us a chance to keep our American players longer on our rosters and reward them for the contributions they make. And look, by the way, under the banner of nationalized Canadians, two of the greatest in the history of our league, Ron Lancaster and Angela Mosca, played as nationalized Canadians. And so, you know, I think it's hard to argue that those two gentlemen weren't just as Canadian as those of us who were born here.
Absolutely. As a kid, you know, watching both those guys play, you discovered what country they were born in later, because you just assumed that they were Canadian, and they were obviously pillars of the CFL. So I totally agree with that point. So that's the sort of the hot button part of the CBA. What's underrated about this CBA?
Well, there's a lot. First of all, you know, it's a long-term deal. So now we can focus on building our partnership with the players. I think that was number one. You know, we went into this wanting to build the framework for a different kind of relationship with our players, less transactional and more about building something together. There's revenue sharing in this CBA, so now we can focus on how do we grow the game together. There's guaranteed contracts in this contract for the players, and that again will give us an opportunity to retain our players and more roster continuity. That's really positive. You know, Jim, kind of everywhere you look, there were things that the players wanted, and we knew they were important. And I'm so proud of our bargaining committee. And frankly, Jim, I'm proud of the players' bargaining committee as well, because I think they came together and gave us the foundation, this framework I talk about, for the kind of partnership we want to have. So I think this sets the table for us to, instead of being across the table, which has so often been our relationship with the players, we now get to sit on the same side of the table and sit next to each other and focus on growing this league.
You know, Randy, the premise of hammering out a CBA after fractured years that you've had with revenue, and some years with no revenue, the one year with nothing, I mean, it's nothing short of phenomenal that way, in that respect, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Jim, it is. And, you know, you got to give a ton of credit to our governors, to our owners. I mean, they're high-minded. They see a great future for our league. They encouraged us to make an investment in this relationship with our players and build a future-oriented. And, of course, you know, the owners certainly had a couple of very tough years, but they also acknowledged that it was a couple of tough years on the players. So, you know, we all had to come together and find a way to change the nature of our relationship, build something different, and set the table for a great future. And I think that's exactly what we've done today. I have nothing but accolades for the two bargaining committees, because I think they delivered something special.
Okay, so you got a solid base to move forward with. Does that favor expansion to Atlantic Canada?
Well, I think it just generally favors the future. Start there. You know, look, the trifecta of great developments, you know, in the last year, the creation of a revenue sharing model. This was really important, I think, if we want to be a great league, and we got that done. Then there's the partnership with Genius Sports, which is going to give us access to, you know, marketing capabilities that we haven't had in the past. And then finally, this long-term partnership with our players. I think now is the time for us to, you know, get excited for our existing CFL owners and the future owners of our teams, including in an expansion context. And, you know, we're going to get to work on conversations about expansion. You know, our owners have asked us, and you know, we've promised them that we'll do it right. But we're going to get real serious in the days ahead. And look, we need to be in Atlantic Canada. I believe that. I think it's the one piece of the Canadian puzzle that, you know, has eluded us for far too long. And now we're going to sit down with the group that we've been talking to and talk about how do we build Canada's 10th franchise? How do we get that long overdue franchise in Atlantic Canada? So, Jim, it's, you know, for me, it's going to be a big priority in the days to come.
Randy, as you know, the league is strong in some areas. Attendance-wise, Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, there's room for improvement, to say the very least. What's the concern level about that?
Well, I think, again, so many of the things that we've done in this CBA and things we did in the relationship with Genius Sports were all designed to help us market our game better, to reach a new generation of fans. Jim, that's why this product review we did this past winter was so important, because it really talked to sports fans, and we got really great feedback on what they wanted. You know, they want the game to be fun, fast, and flowing, and they want exciting. You know, the moving of the hash marks, I think, is going to give us an opportunity to really open up our game and take advantage of this giant field that I think is really the hallmark of the CFL game. And that's going to help us in our big markets. And look, from, you know, Gary Stern and his family in Montreal and their commitment to growing and building in that market, to MLSE here in Toronto and their commitment to the league, and then to Amar Doman and what he's talking about, what he's got plans for in BC, I think the future is bright. Jim, no doubt, we're going to have to work really hard, and nothing worth having in life comes easy. I just think we've got the right people at the right time, and I know they're committed to rolling up their sleeves, on the strength of a whole lot of good news that we've been, you know, worked hard to achieve. I think I think the future's bright in those three cities, and I think it's actually brighter than ever in the CFL in general.
I think I probably asked you this once before, but now that you're several years into your role as commissioner of the CFL, how much different is it than you thought, and maybe some positive surprises along the way?
Well, I think it's obviously, you know, when I look back, I think, well, you know, the Montreal situation, you know, with the Wettenhalls deciding to step away was a real challenge. Of course, Jim, none of us anticipated the pandemic and effect it would have on our families, on the world of sports, and obviously it was a very difficult time, you know, for humanity, less for sports, but very difficult. And I think now, I think we've taken advantage of those tough times. I think the thing that I'm most proud of, Jim, I'm most proud of the governors. I'm most excited about how committed they are to the future of the league, how much support they give for the, you know, the bold, ambitious plans that we've set in front of them, and how much they're prepared to support those plans. I think in that way, I think the greatest surprise for me, and it just because you don't know, you just don't know what to expect from your partners, and I've been overwhelmed by the level of commitment we've seen from the governors. You know, the relationship that we built with our team presidents and the way we collaborate and work together has been a real bright spot for me. So, and now, of course, I'm looking forward to a stronger, you know, mutually beneficial partnership with the players, and I'm excited about that. So, you know, I think just generally you go into a job like this, you certainly can't anticipate the major events, and nobody would have anticipated the pandemic. But I'm awful proud to have stood shoulder to shoulder with our governors, I know, during this time. And I think that, for me, has been the most gratifying thing.
Randy, really appreciate your time. Nice to reconnect, and happy to see Toronto and Ottawa, 7:30 on TSN tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. Have a great day and look after yourself.
I will. Thank you. That's Randy Ambrosi, the CFL commissioner, as the deal is all done and back to football, as I said. Toronto in Ottawa tonight, Edmonton and Winnipeg tomorrow night, BC, Calgary, Montreal, and Hamilton. So the games take over now, which is the way it should be. And you know, some of that stuff will be debated till the end of time, but and nothing the matter with that. We'll continue on and sort of wrap it up here on Gameplay next, setting the table for Overdrive at the top of the hour. Gameplay TSN 1050, streaming online, tsn1050.ca. in the iHeartRadio app. Yeah. Gameplay, TSN 1050, final segment, and then, of course, Overdrive takes over today. Andy Petrillo driving, Noodles, and Frankie C. in the passenger seats. Frankie C. He'll be with us tomorrow on Yes Guy. It airs at 2 in the afternoon. You know, I go back to our Leaf games, Nick. Frankie C. was a real treat to work with. We had a lot of fun, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? This, I think, is his Overdrive co-hosting debut. So this is a big one for him.
Really? Wow. He's been a guest. Through, isn't he?
He's been a guest on Overdrive, but he's never been an official co-host. Sure. So this is his co-hosting debut.
Yeah, in a recent conversation, I took him to task for tackling my eating at the Leafs games, where he did the pizza story, which is true, and he did the ice cream story, which is true. But yeah, I have to go on the air for 4 hours, so yeah, I don't see anybody else on the air for 4 hours, so I tend to get a little aggressive when the pizza's out. You've seen me do that.
Yeah, but at the same time, they look out for you. They just give you the heads up. Hey, the pizza's coming, so that you know you're not aggressive with it. You're just there, ready to go.
Well, they know I'm going to plow through that line, so they just—they don't need the hassle anymore. Hey, Jim, pizza's coming. Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, see,
it's true. It's true.
That's what happens when you create some space. It's like being on the ice. You create some space for yourself, and good things happen.
Absolutely.
So let's go now with the sound of the day.
Sound of the day. Sound of the day. Here comes the sound of the day.
Well, everybody's had a lot to say about it. The Coleman goal that was disallowed, distinct kicking motion. Sorry, I saw a skate landing in an opportune spot that guided the puck in the net, not a distinct kicking motion, and I didn't see conclusive evidence to overturn the call on the ice. That's just me. How about Mr. Coleman? What does he think about all that?
I don't think I understand the rule. Getting pushed, just try to keep my foot on the ice. I don't know. I haven't watched it enough, but in live speed, I felt like I was in a battle. And just my understanding is you can direct a puck, but you just can't kick it. And I didn't feel that I kicked it.
You know, I got to say, I think he was judged too harshly. A lot of people, ex-players, would say, well, he looked down. Well, of course he looked down. He was hit and hit into the goaltender, and he had one foot that he could do with. So I'm sure he wanted to see where he was going to step. Just so he didn't have an injury, he guided the puck into the net. So not a distinct kicking motion, and I agree with him. I don't understand the rule either. I thought it was harsh, actually. And, as Craig Button said, it didn't decide the series. It's not the reason that Edmonton won. But I just think it was like people reading into, well, he was trying to do this. Well, that's not what the rule says. The rule doesn't say, what was he trying to do? The rule says distinct kicking motion. Go out, get a soccer ball, kick the ball, and then take a step. There's a difference between taking a step and kicking the ball. And if you look where you're stepping, you shouldn't be penalized for looking, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And as I said, I mean, I can definitely see it being a distinct kicking motion in some people's eyes, but if it was called a goal on the ice,
really?
To me, if it was called a goal on the ice, there was not enough to overturn it. If it was called a no goal on the ice, there was not enough to overturn it that way either. So because it was called a goal, it should have stayed a goal.
That's probably the best way to sum it up. Whether you see a kicking motion or not, the bottom line was, what did you see in the video that the referee didn't see that would cause you to overturn? And I didn't see anything that way. Just before we get stuck for time here, gameplay on TSN 1050 was brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. So we're sort of stuck on that, but just because, and another thing that came out of that thing last night was, well, if this is going to happen in the second round, what happens going forward, and is there a Stanley Cup based on this? And I want to go back a number of years when the composite sticks first started showing up, and they would shatter on a slap shot, and we were all afraid that it would cost somebody a Stanley Cup. Defenseman couldn't keep the puck in at the point because his stick broke and somebody go down and score. I don't know that ever happened, but you tend to look at something and then project it forward and go, what if? I guess you have to wait till it happens, and I hope it certainly doesn't, but you never know.
You are right, sir.
And on that note, I know we're out of, we're out of time. I'm sorry. I babbled incessantly there, and I won't say a word the rest of the weekend. But you won't hear me, so you won't know. Up next is Overdrive with Andy Petrillo. Thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend.